This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, we break down all the developments as disgraced Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin succumbs to grassroots pressure, announcing he's retiring from the legislature. In our interview, we talked to grassroots activist turned Corsicana City Councilman Chris Woolsey about the challenges facing taxpayers with their local governments. And we close with a commentary from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan on the real nature of the Democrats' war on President Trump. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the internet at www.texasscorecard.com. Last week, had Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan on the program, and we released audio of his meeting with Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin. Well, for this week's top news, I've got Brandon Waltons and Destin Sinsky, Capitol Bureau Chief and Capitol Correspondent for Texas Scorecard. Bonin has now announced he is going to retire.
How a week really changes things.
Yes. So, obviously the release of that audio had a big impact. Tell us a little bit about the announcement, and then let's walk through some of the developments over the last week.
Yeah, this was an announcement that came after, a lot of legislators, a lot of Republican legislators in the Texas House started calling for it, and it really was because of a lot of grassroots pressure put on those folks. But, as a matter of background, right, not everybody pays attention to all this. Some people have stuff to do in actual lives.
Some people, hey, I got to get kids to soccer practice, important things.
This whole saga sort of started a few months ago, back earlier in the summer, when Texas Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin, had a meeting with Michael Quinn Sullivan, Power Texans CEO, where he made this backroom offer of essentially media credentials in exchange for the political targeting of certain Republican members. He also says some not very nice things about some of members of the chamber and some other lewd comments as well.
Well, and a lot of comments that are out of step with his public statements.
Right.
I think that was a big thing. A lot of hypocrisy.
Right. And so it was revealed that Michael had recorded the meeting. That audio was later made available to Republican lawmakers and activists to come listen to, and then eventually released in full, as you said last week. And, we've seen throughout this process, right, that it's been a sort of a slow buildup for this. You had a couple lawmakers coming out after they heard the tape, like State Representative Kyle Biederman. You're calling for Bonin's resignation, calling for him to step down. But there wasn't the big avalanche, I guess, really until the very end of members calling for that. I mean, you go back a month ago even, you had members, some members, pretty split in the caucus, the Republican caucus, calling for a meeting so that they could actually deal with this and being denied that.
Well, and so this audio put out last week, and then
sure.
We finally do have this meeting.
Yeah, I think the preface is important. So also in that meeting, now former Republican House Caucus Chairman Dustin Burroughs, he steps down, and some of the members in the Republican House Caucus were asking for a meeting, way back then to fill that position, kind of a proxy vote for who would be supporting Bonin and his faction and otherwise. Well, now, last week comes, a few days after the recording, the SREC finds a majority of their members to sign on to a letter asking Bonin to step down right about the time the regularly
scheduled Republican Executive Committee.
Yes, sorry, the Board of the Republican
Party
of Texas.
Leadership, yeah.
Right. And so at about that same time is the regularly scheduled quarterly meeting here in Austin of the Republican House Caucus. They meet, and it's a bit of a zoo from what we've heard, Tony.
Yeah, walk us through the reports of what we heard, because obviously, now everybody's out there saying, oh, okay, guy's got to resign, we got to get rid of him, all these things.
Right.
That was not the immediate reaction in private.
Right, and so it starts with a very emotional Dennis Bonin coming before the members, saying that he, regrets how things have unfolded, and he says, I'm prepared to resign if you guys will second the motion and vote on me to do that. And everybody is very hesitant to kind of go down that path for one reason or another. And what happens is you get these kind of fiery speeches from members either in support of Bonin or opposing him. You've got Tan Parker, who says this is unacceptable. We need to address this today. It has to get done.
And Parker, one of the guys targeted by Bonin.
On the list,
on the list of targets.
And then immediately after that, you get a very passionate Dan Flynn, for example, who comes up and says, absolutely not. This is political opportunism. Now, Flynn, it's unacceptable.
Flynn, of course, was a partner in Bonin's bank. So, you know, there's some kind of connections there. Very interesting. It appeared to be a ploy, and this meeting dragged on for hours.
It's a trap.
Yeah. But it was this ploy. I offered to resign, and nobody really wanted to take it. But it didn't really come off as cleanly as I think the Bonin folks.
No, not
thought
at all.
That they were
especially when you consider. I mean, a small point there. I mean, this meeting was supposed to take 40 minutes, maybe 30 minutes to an hour. They were in there for 5 hours, letting this deliberation go on. So, definitely went off the rails for them. Eventually, they end up settling on this statement that sort of condemns part of what he says, condemns some comments he makes about local governments and about some of the members, doesn't address the quid pro quo scandal that's really at the heart of this, and falls short of asking for resignation, but says
we condemn it. Right.
Yeah. So that was put out.
We condemn it, and we're going to have our process about how we pick our next speaker. Some people kind of had the observation, they said, this probably means their current present intent is that they don't really want to keep him next time. But it's kind of one of those political statements where, everybody signs on to it because it doesn't say anything.
Well, and even more interesting then, Tony, is, after the meeting lets out and these lawmakers are headed back to their district or their hotel room in Austin or whatever, you've got people that come out with their own statements.
Saying,
well, this goes too far, or that didn't go anywhere near far enough, you know.
Some people like, I think the whole Collin County delegation, Jeff Leach, Matt Shaheen, the rest of them, coming out and saying, well, we'll essentially give them a chance. You had State Representative Mike Lang as well saying, well, Bonin needs to re-earn our trust.
But on the other hand, it's
very much is almost, to me, those were almost an endorsement because they're saying, hey, this guy, we need to give him a chance. He needs to re-earn our trust. Well, it's saying, okay, well, he needs to stay in office. Right.
Yeah. But to the contrary, you had members saying that this is obviously an unacceptable do-nothing statement. State Representative Dwayne Burns, for example, says, after what happened, the statement doesn't go far enough, and I absolutely could not support the speaker any longer.
Yeah.
And then those statements started tallying up to a number where it became almost inevitable, with a tipping point coming at some point on Monday.
So on Monday, you had, I think we were up to like maybe 20 or so of these individual statements from Republican members saying, hey, I do not support Bonin remaining as Speaker.
New leadership is necessary.
New leadership, right? And then we had this big statement by several of his top committee chairmen.
Well, that's right. And that was really the moment that things really became obvious that Bonin was not going to be in the speaker's chair next session, because you had this big release. It was 9 o'clock at night, kind of eating dinner, finishing up, and then the phone starts blowing up. You see that you've got some of his top committee chairmen. I mean, you've got Ford Price, who chairs the Counters Committee, Lyle Larson, Chris Patty, Dan Huberty. You've got John Frullo as well. I mean, these are people that are considered pretty senior members saying, can't support Dennis, after that caucus meeting, not going to support him for speaker. And after that,
the writing was pretty much on the wall. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that statement comes out as we go into the night. You then see even more statements, literally late at night, these statements coming out.
Saying, up until midnight.
You saw
folks piling on, literally.
Funny enough, Dan Flynn, who'd been the most, ardent supporter through everything.
Yeah.
It comes out, I've heard from my constituents, right, in the last 2 hours. I made the observation, the greatest sin in the text ledge is to be on the losing team, sadly, right? That's a problem with the legislative culture. And I think it was just saw this cascade of members just saying, okay, now I'm off. I'm off the team.
Initiated in great part to the grassroots pressure of folks that went out and they called their lawmakers. And then, it just took a few. And then you saw this domino result where ultimately you end up on a Monday morning after this happens, Tuesday morning after this happens, and you have Speaker Bonin saying, all right, I've heard from folks. I'm not running for re-election either for the House or for Speaker.
So he's saying, look, I'm gonna hang it up after this term. I'm going to leave office, not resigning, retiring. So the question remains: is he going to remain as Speaker? That's something to watch. And then, what's going to happen with this criminal investigation that's going on? Because that has not been resolved yet. So something that I think all of us, I mean, this is the story's not over, even though the climax of the story, I think, has been achieved. There is still more to come as to whether he will remain in office and what will happen with him as a result of his actions.
Right. There's a lot more to watch, but for now we know that he will not be Speaker next session.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week Chris Woolsey of the Corsicana City Council. Chris, you're the youngest member of the Corsicana City Council, longtime activist, and finally said, hey, you know, I've had enough. I'm going to do my part to be involved. You ran for city council and won. Thanks for coming on the program. I want to talk about that.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Yeah. So, look, you're a conservative activist who's been engaged as a citizen and said, hey, I want to go run for council. And actually, now you've won. You're there. And I wanted to get your perspective, because a lot of times people think, you know, city councilman, conservative, you know, those are not very synonymous typically. But there are conservatives out there who are running. And I wanted to get a little bit of your perspective on that. I mean, what is the difference? Obviously, a lot of people have a tunnel vision of looking at things that are going on with the president, things that are going on in Washington. But there are all these offices from Washington, D.C. down to your local city council that are important. How does your conservative philosophy inform what you do there on the council?
Right, Tony. So you're right. There are vast differences between what a conservative in D.C., what a conservative in Austin, and what a conservative on the city council are doing. You know, when I was block walking and just talking to the voters in my district, more than once I had somebody ask me about Social Security or health care. And, you know, it's tough telling them, like, hey, I'm sorry, I want what's best for you, but the city council doesn't handle that. Like, we are taking care of your roads. We're taking care of your first responders. We're making sure that water's coming to your house. Those are the kind of things that we're responsible for. And so a lot of these national and state level debates, they never really trickle down to the local level. And so half of the work is just helping people understand that, and then helping them understand what are the areas that we can do something in. And so there's a couple principles that I see that it doesn't matter if you're at the national, state, or the local level, they apply. And to me is that as conservatives, it is our duty, our job to prioritize the taxpayer and use their tax dollars in the most efficient and sparse way as they direct us. And then also, we should be defining the proper role of government.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, what is the proper role of government for a city council? I mean, these things exist. You know, obviously, you have counties that kind of fulfill the role of the state at a local level. You have state government. What are cities really there to do from a conservative perspective?
Right. So, you know, I think we all agree that the reason government exists is to protect the rights of citizens from infringement. And so knowing that as a conservative, okay, what is my first duty? It is ensuring our public safety. It's making sure that we have police officers. It's making sure that we have firefighters. It's making sure that we have ambulances. I mean, really, without those things, there's not a whole lot of use for a city. We need to make sure that there is water getting to every house, and that there are water pipes that are not going to break and causes more money to be spent in repairs. Make sure that water's clean. You know, those are very important things. The one that that's very important to our citizens here in Corsicana is fixing roads. We live in an area where the soil it just moves around a lot, and it causes a lot of problems
across Texas.
yeah, and so everybody's kind of got some of the same issues, and so it's our job to figure out, okay, if for this $1 from a taxpayer, what is the most efficient way to use that? How do I get the best public safety for our taxpayers? How do we get the best water for our taxpayers? How do we get the best roads for our taxpayers?
Well, and the best for the price, right? You know, you could chase perfection forever. Let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the things that motivated you to run for office. I understand that tax increases and taxing issues was certainly a big motivation for you.
Right. I don't want to call it a career in politics, but I was recruited to political activism back in 2008 by Barack Obama. he is the one who caused me to become a conservative activist. And so from there, I did stuff in college. After college, I helped on some different state level campaigns. I've knocked on a ton of doors, made a bunch of phone calls. And so I saw that the city council and the local politics, that has the most effect on your daily life.
Right.
Whatever Congress is doing, the circus that they have right now, they're not doing a whole lot that affects your daily life. But your city and your county, they have a huge effect. And so, you know, I wanted to see a community where I could live, you know, for the next 50 years, where my parents can retire, where hopefully I'll have kids that grow up in this community. I wanted it to be the best that it could be. And so that's what motivated me to do something, because so many times people want to complain, right? They want to complain about what's going on, but they don't bring a solution. And so I was upset with some of the things that I saw, with some things that maybe weren't getting fixed as quick as I wanted to or in the way that I thought they should. And so I said, all right, if I'm gonna complain, I'm going to be part of the solution. And so I made the decision to run for city council. Back in the winter of last year, I took office in May, and then I was able to dive right in and have a voice and a say on some of the issues that I thought needed to be addressed.
Now, one of the conflicts you've seen there on the council, and this is something going on across the state, people are experiencing it, is a lot of misunderstanding over what a tax increase is. Obviously, a lot of times you'll have these local governments come in and say, well, we're going to keep your rate the same. But in fact, because of appraisal growth and other changes, they're getting more money out of your pocket year over year.
Right. And that the property tax system is one of the things that motivated me the most. And frankly, the property tax system in Texas as a whole, I think is broken. It's more complicated than it needs to be. There is no clear responsibility for who's responsible for raising these tax dollars that come out of your pocket. The terminology is very vague. It's misleading sometimes. And so just the system is set up not allowing taxpayers to really know what's going on. And so the way we have it right now, Texas taxpayers are paying rent to the state to live in their property. That is what it is. And so the way it breaks down at the local level is you have the city that sets a tax rate. You have an appraisal district that appraises your property and assigns it a value. And so those two things work together, but because they work together, nobody's ultimately responsible when your taxes go up. Because the cities, they can keep the rate the same and let the appraisal value go up, and then they get more money. But they can also then say, hey, we didn't raise your taxes. The appraisal district raised your taxes. Or the appraisal district can point it back and say, hey, the city's supposed to set the rate. We didn't raise your taxes. They did.
Yeah,
so when no one's responsible, no one's responsible.
Yeah, no one is forced to take responsibility for this. This is actually something that is being taught to these local governments by their kind of umbrella organization, Texas Municipal League. They're being taught that this is how they can extract more money out of their citizens.
Yeah, so earlier this summer, I went to the Texas Municipal League's newly elected official orientation. And this is a place where everybody who just got elected, they come to one spot and they sit there for 2 days and they get trained on all the different things that you need to know to be in the city. And when I got there, I realized it was not something I agreed with. One of the initial presentations was titled "Shaking the Money Tree."
Yeah. This was a lot of coverage. I think we had some articles up, "Shake the Money Tree," and I guess, you know, you, me, every taxpayer, we're the tree, and we're getting shook up.
Yeah, and it was talking about all the different avenues to collect revenue, which is, you know, how do we get more money out of taxpayers? And so I was kind of upset with that. And the appalling thing to me was over the course of this this specific presentation, but the orientation as a whole, they kind of guided you on how to disguise this property tax increase, just like I talked about. They told all of these freshly elected officials, if you maintain the same tax rate year after year, then the appraisal district is going to raise appraisals, home values are going to go up, and that way you can collect more taxes and then tell residents that you didn't raise their tax rate while getting more tax dollars in your pocket. And the fact that this was being taught by an organization who gets taxpayer dollars, and then they can use those taxpayer dollars to then teach fresh, green, newly elected officials how to get more money, and then also take that and go and lobby the state legislature to prevent property tax reform.
Do you think that it's this Texas Municipal League? I mean, pretty much every city participates in this organization. They fund it with tax dollars. It has lobbyists that go to Austin, as you mentioned. Is this kind of setting, is it toxifying the culture of our local government officials?
Well, I think it's very telling, the information that they're giving cities. When we just saw the president of TML declare as a Democrat for Congress out in Midland, I believe. Like, to me, that is very telling. And I think that taxpayer-funded lobbying, you know, before I was on city council, really before this orientation that I went to, that was kind of like a second-tier issue with me. But then after I sat through this two-day thing, I realized not only is taxpayer-funded lobbying a huge issue, we need lobbying reform as a whole. Just the way that it works, when these tax dollars are going to lobby against taxpayers, that is just appalling to me. And so if we're gonna go after that, we need to rethink how we do the lobbying system as a whole to make sure that, you know, that all of this money isn't being spent kind of in nefarious ways to prevent transparency from taxpayers or prevent their best interests.
Now, that obviously, you know, a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying, something very actively debated in the legislature. But as you mentioned, you know, there are different things that a conservative and that a citizen can demand of their officials at the state and then the local level. What can you as a local official do? And Gaius, consequently, what can other local city councilmen around the state, what can taxpayers be saying, hey, what do I want you to do to deal with that problem?
So the best thing that local officials around the state could do is block walk when they are not up for election. That is the absolute best thing that you can do, because what my constituents tell me to do is going to be different from what constituents tell a conservative in Austin or Plano or Tyler. That it's going to be very different. And our number one goal is to listen to our taxpayers. And so whatever they are directing us to do is what we need to be doing. But we do see across the state there's some of these consistent issues that are coming up, like banning taxpayer-funded lobbying. I think taxpayers are becoming more and more aware of how their dollars are being spent. Yeah. And I think they're starting to realize, hey, like, we don't want our taxes going up every year. We want to at least see a reason for it. And so, to me, that would be the number one thing that local officials could do. And it's tough, right? Because block walking is not the most fun thing to do. But for anybody who's kind of grown up in the the activist circle and the campaign circle, they know that block walking is effective.
Yeah. And well, and you make real
no better way.
You make real connections with real people. Well, right. We're running out of time. Thank you for the things you're doing there to be a voice for common sense on city council and, you know, at these TML conferences and things like that. If folks wanted to connect with you and learn more about the work you're doing there in Corsicana, how can they reach you?
It's very simple. The Facebook is the best way to get a hold of me. You can find me at my profile, Chris Woolsey, or there's my city council profile, which is Chris Woolsey, Corsicana City Councilman, Precinct 3. I try to do my best to just keep that, you know, updates on what's going on, giving people my view on what I did, informing taxpayers. That is the best way to get in contact with me. You know, I don't have a website or anything like that.
Great. Well, I appreciate everything you're doing there, and thanks for coming on and telling us a little bit about it.
Hey, Tony, I appreciate the call. Thanks for what y'all are doing.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Your state lawmaker probably campaigned as a conservative, as someone who would go to Austin to cut spending and limit government. But did he keep that promise? At index.empowertexans.com, you can see how your lawmaker voted on the major issues of the legislative session and view his score on the Fiscal Responsibility Index. The Fiscal Responsibility Index is the premier tool for taxpayers to hold their lawmakers accountable. Check us out today at index.empowertexans.com.
Congressional Democrats want you to think that they're at war with President Trump, but as Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan explains in this week's commentary, they're really making war on the American people.
The political elite seem to think that by overthrowing President Donald Trump, they can shut the people up. If the overflow rallies are any indication, that's not happening. With the Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. I had the opportunity to attend President Trump's rally in Dallas recently. What struck me is that part of the reason the political elite want Trump gone are what the rallies represent. The political elite from both parties see Americans unified and electrified by a vision for American exceptionalism, and it terrifies them. Frankly, the political elite hate President Trump because he connects with the hopes and aspirations of Americans, running contrary to the self-serving cronyism that's become the hallmark of most politicians. Indeed, the rallies are less about Trump the man than about people being united in a shared passion for the American dream our founding fathers presented. People rally with Trump because he unabashedly stands with them. The rallies are full of people who see in Trump someone who fights alongside them. Yes, Donald Trump may be the brand name, but he's the brand because people see in him someone who doesn't lecture them but speaks with them, someone who's serving them, not pandering to them. Before the president spoke, I had the opportunity to visit in line at the concession stand with a retired Army officer, fully decked out in Trump regalia. As we spoke, he mentioned his disagreement, his strong disagreement, with the president's position on Syria, Turkey, and the Kurds. But then he said something remarkable. He said he'd probably have less respect for Trump if the president had adopted his position. Why? Because President Trump campaigned on staying out of foreign wars and scaling back overseas commitments. This man spoke about how he appreciates, finally, having a president whose words and actions are so closely aligned. He might have been unique, but I believe many more people, men and women of the audience, view the president in the same way. They see a man who actually loves America and is earnestly seeking to deliver on his promises, to keep his commitments, and to join the people in the task of keeping America exceptional. The rallies may have Trump as the highlight, but at the center is something deeper, something more lasting. It's the optimistic hope that America's best days are ahead of her, that the promise of the American Revolution is alive, that we will be an ever more brightly shining city on a hill. The political elite seem to think that by overthrowing President Trump, they can shut the people up. If what I saw at the rally in Dallas is any indication, that isn't happening. We must tell the political elite, the swamp dwellers and cronies of both parties, that we're not giving up, not on Trump, not on America, not now, not ever. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
If you enjoyed the program, make sure you don't miss next week's show by subscribing to the Texas Scorecard Radio podcast, available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.